It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is 4 minutes past nine and you're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show on this Wednesday. It's the 21st of May 2025. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. And mentioned it to Lee there just before the news, but we had a fantastic day in Carntana yesterday for a fantastic reason as well. It's the daycare services for older people reopened. They've been reopened for 6 weeks now, and they kind of thought they were halfway through a trial period. And as we learnt on the show yesterday, that trial period has effectively been scrapped now because it's been such a success and the feedback was so positive. And hopefully now more people will go and avail of those services, having heard from the people that use them and those that run them as well. Fantastic. But we were looked after really, really well. We were treated like kings and queens, and we had a fantastic, fantastic time. So thank you very much to everyone down in Carntana for another fantastic reception. I've done two or three outside broadcasts from there, and on each occasion you always come away feeling, you know, spoilt rotten. So thank you very much for that. Let's have a look at the papers today, and we're in a situation now where you're face to face with I told you so, because a dangerous pedestrian crossing at Bank of Ireland Ballybuffet is to be moved to a safer location nearby as plans to upgrade a number of pedestrian crossings on the N15 at Ballybuffet and Stranola from day one. And I don't think it was actually even concluded. We were on this programme, not just me, but the listeners as well, saying, what in God's name are they doing putting a crossing there at that complicated junction with yellow boxes and an entrance to a car park and traffic coming in and out from the Glenties Road? It made no sense. And this was all sort of part of a trial for the people of Ballybuffet and Stranola and those travelling through it, a new way of pedestrians and traffic sort of interacting. Made no sense at all. Don't know how it ever got painted in and put in place. And thankfully, it's going to be moved without serious injury. And that is just pure luck, because it should never have been there in the first place. But reading on from the Finn Valley Voice, Donegal County Council held a public information event for the public to view the design proposal on Wednesday the 14th of May at the Base Enterprise Centre. The project proposal includes upgrading existing crosses, including the addition of four raised tables at specific locations. Modifications will be made to footpaths at other locations along the N15. A number of car parking bays and disabled car parking bays at College Court entrance will be removed as part of the works. The aim is to improve pedestrian safety and create greater awareness of the crossings for motorists. Now, who would have thought we'd end up here? Why don't we do the public consultation on this show? Because what they're doing now is everything that should have been done from the beginning. The people didn't deserve to be experimented on, neither did the motorists either. Okay, so that's good news. Better late than never. On to the Irish Times now. And finally, the international community seems to be growing something of a conscience, because international pressure is mounting on Israel to end its military offensive in Gaza and to allow in significantly more humanitarian aid. A majority of EU states yesterday backed a proposal to review the Union's trade relations with Israel, while Britain suspended talks with the Israelis on a new trade deal. Now, the Israel population is made up of predominantly Jewish people, and, you know, those people endured the Holocaust, effectively. Millions upon millions of people killed. And of course, too, there was a vote in Europe. Germany not backing the some of the EU's moves as it relates to Gaza. They were, for the most part, responsible for that Holocaust. And you would think that those two countries in particular would see what they're doing to another group of humans being completely unacceptable. But anyway, maybe this international intervention's too little too late. How many kids have to die? How many kids have to starve? How many women have to be blown to bits just for living in a particular part of the world? Well, Israel's near 3-month blockade of food and aid supplies to the Palestinian enclave has seen a number of EU states rowing behind a fresh effort to pressure it to change its course. Ireland was one of 17 of the EU's 27 states to vote for a review of the bloc's trade agreement with Israel. The shift in the position of several European governments follows dire warnings about conditions inside the Gaza Strip. And again, I would say, a part of me would actually almost like to visit Israel and interact with the population there, because it's just unbelievable that people on block could know that very close to them there are children being starved to death, and they are being starved to death. There's babies that are 15,000 babies are expected to die in the next couple of weeks because there's no baby food. There's no. It's very hard to think. I can never put myself in a position of what, no matter what was done to me, I suppose within reason, to be able to go about my daily business lying on a beach or eating lunch in a nice city, knowing that this is happening so close by. I simply couldn't just square that circle in my own head. I know I couldn't. On to the Irish Daily Mail this morning, and locals and friends of farmer Michael Gain have been left deeply angered and frustrated over the handling of the missing man's case. The suspected remains of the 56-year-old sheep farmer were discovered after machinery was used to spread slurry on his land late last week. This has resulted in new searches being carried out by specialist military personnel at the property just outside Kenmare in Kerry. The discovery of the body parts resulted in the arrest of a man who was known to Mr. Gain. However, that man was released without charge on Monday night, and the investigation remains ongoing. One of the areas sealed off for further examination was just metres away from where Mr. Gain's RAV4 SUV was discovered in the immediate aftermath of his disappearance. Friends and extended family members have been left angered for how long it took to discover his remains, security sources told the Mail, with many now claiming that the popular farmer should have been discovered sooner. That's a fair assessment, said one well-informed source. These people are angry. They are his friends, extended family, people who have known him decades. So Gardaí appreciate that there is a lot of emotion on that. Is it emotion? It's really like head scratching. You know, if his remains were always in this place, why weren't they discovered beforehand? Why were they happened upon? Or if they were moved there, I don't know, why aren't they saying so? Because there is a great deal of public interest in that story, of course. This is an interesting one because, of course, we've become very reliant on masses being streamed, be they regular mass, whether they be, you know, funerals, weddings, in fact. A lot of churches now stream their proceedings online, but churches are taking legal advice about how to avoid being sued over live streamed services after defamation proceedings were issued against two pastors in County Offaly. This is the Irish Independent, by the way. A man who alleged he was defamed by his teenage daughter during a baptism ceremony at Cornerstone Sleeve Bloom Church in Tullamore was awarded €14,400. He took the case against the church's pastors, Gavin von Mollendorf and Wendy von Mollendorf. A group representing 200 evangelical churches in Ireland is now re-examining the live streaming of services. Nick Park, Executive Director of Evangelical Alliance Ireland, said legal advice had been sought to prevent actions of a similar nature being taken. But presumably, you know, any time you are streaming, like now, for an example, you know, you are responsible for that content and what is said on it. So it might make people think again. Now, there was I asked a lot of questions about Israel's involvement in the Eurovision, and I think a lot of people that I asked it on this program perhaps didn't get the angle I was coming from, because they were saying, well, it's not really about the song contest, is it? It's about really what's happening in Gaza. And I was trying to say, yeah, it is, but this is not insignificant either. And for one reason or for other, Israel almost won the whole thing. They came second in the end. And there are question marks now over that. But it kind of, you know, with what's going on now, when you have an entire world community effectively saying, you know, this is a song contest and what you're doing mustn't be too bad, because we're prepared to almost have you win a song contest, something that's supposed to be fun and frivolous, right? So it was never insignificant. And that's why I was talking about it a little last week or the week before, because I did point out on this program, you might remember, that the last time there were calls for Israel to be banned from the competition, they won it. And the reason I was mentioning that is because I anticipated exactly what happened, that Israel finished very high in the competition. In fact, to be honest with you, I anticipated them winning it again. But the Irish Daily Star and other papers report that Eurovision's voting system could be overhauled after claims of vote rigging. Belgium and Spain said the system where people can vote up to 20 times is open to manipulation, and an RTE spokesperson confirmed it had requested a breakdown in voting numbers from the European Broadcasting Union and its voting partner once. Referencing a statement from Martin Green, director of the Eurovision Song Contest, RTE added it looked forward to participating in the discussion and review outlined within the statement. Now, it has to be said, I think Ireland awarded Israel 7 points or something. That doesn't mean tens of thousands of people voted, because there are so many acts that it would only require a little bit of manipulation of those 20 votes for them to get so many points, because people really aren't that engaged. There's 225,000 people watching. How many are going to vote? What, 50,000? No, nowhere near that. Probably 20,000, 15,000, 10,000. We'll find out. And as I say, all the votes are spread over 26 countries. So it doesn't take an awful lot of manipulation for Israel to, in Ireland, for an example, to go up the ranks. But that will all be investigated, I am sure. But as I say, it's insignificant, but also given the way the world is now, it's not insignificant, because it was almost like a sort of an endorsement of what's going on. I wonder if any members of the LGB community are listening to this show and have a say on this, because Conor Sheehan, he's admitted he would not feel comfortable holding a partner's hand in any Irish city due to increased toxicity towards members of the LGBT community. He made the comments just hours after the Labour Party event to celebrate 10 years since the marriage equality referendum passed. Had to be hastily moved to a different venue. The party suggested there had been far-right threats and a protest planned outside the event on Monday evening. Speaking in Leinster House yesterday morning, Senator Laura Harman said the original venue pulled out because it was worried about the health and safety of their staff. The Gardaí later advised Labour to move venues. Sheehan, Labour TD for Limerick City, said he had been subjected to increased levels of homophobic abuse since becoming a public rep. Now, is that online? Which is completely inexcusable, but there are bots. We have the highest rate of bots in this country. So they are, I think 78% of online activity in Ireland in terms of X and other platforms is not real. They're AI bots effectively that push certain narratives and certain agendas. And that's why if people had to use their ID, it would get rid of a lot of that. But anyway, I'm just wondering if you are a member of that community, if you would be more cautious now in Ireland, in your own country, with public displays of affection and what have you. If that's something that you want to talk about, let us know. 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or call us on 074 91 25,000. And two, I noticed actually, sorry to rant, I'll cut off this, I'll go on to the next part of the program very shortly, but I was on TikTok and there's one account there that's using AI technology to create videos, and it's really, it's quite good, right? But it's clearly AI technology, and it's of a young girl purporting to be Irish, and she's talking about immigration and all this type of stuff, and she's directing people to a website, and there are dozens and dozens of comments underneath it, and thousands of likes, and no one's actually realised that it's AI. They think, fair play to you, great to see the youth of Ireland speaking out, remarkable stuff. And it's completely clearly AI generated, because the same image is used with three or four different accents on sister accounts of that account. And there's loads of other AI generated content as well. But it's being fed to young people. So it's not even real young people speaking. It's artificially intelligence created young people with Irish accents. But another what I don't get is that people don't realise that. They're not calling out online, unless the comments are being deleted. Finally, Gardaí couldn't find the clothes Joseph Puska wore when he murdered Aisling Murphy because his sister-in-law had burned them, the Central Criminal Court has heard. Four family members of Joseph Puska, who has been convicted of murdering the 23-year-old, are on trial accused of withholding information and assisting him. Sean Gillane, senior counsel for the Director of Public Prosecutions, told the jury that Puska, 36, is not an accused in this trial, but that he looms very large. On the afternoon of January 12th, 22, Joseph Puska attacked Miss Murphy, a young school teacher on the Canal towpath in County Offaly. She died having suffered 12 sharp false injuries to her neck, 11 of which were stabbed wounds. The investigation was ongoing, and now some family members of his are in court. Marek Puska, Josefina Grandova, his brother Lubomir, and Viera, who's accused of lighting the clothes, his sister-in-law. The four of them are in court, accused of sort of aiding and abetting. I think they deny the charges. Okay, that was a run through some of the stories on the front pages and inside the papers today. I'm joined in studio now by independent county councillor Declan Meehan. You don't need those. No. Good morning, Declan. Thanks so much for calling in.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you keeping?
Good, thanks.
Right, now you've been digging in a little deeper to the haematology situation at Letterkenny University Hospital, and what information have you now been provided with?
Yeah, so at the last Regional Health Forum meeting, I had asked for the wait times and wait numbers, those patients waiting on appointments at Letterkenny University Hospital compared to other hospitals across the Western and Northwestern region. We've 676 people in Donegal on the waiting list for haematology appointment, and 200 of them are waiting for over a year. When you compare that to Mayo, as an example, you have the wait time of 1 month, and you have no one really waiting any longer than that. In Sligo, there's 363 on the waiting list, and there's 51 waiting for more than a year. Even in Galway, there's 566 on the waiting list, and only 36 waiting more than a year. So it shows that people have, yet again, much worse wait times in Letterkenny and across Donegal.
Remind our listeners, and some will be acutely aware, an example as to why you might be referred to haematology.
Yeah, so I suppose haematology is around anything to do with blood disorders. So that'll include lymphomas, leukemia, and anything else. And some of them require urgent attention, and some of them are, I suppose, more slow burners that require regular kind of checkups. And a lot of that isn't happening. And I know that haematologists and the haematology team in Letterkenny in particular feel extremely overwhelmed by the level of work that they have to do. And they're not getting neither the senior nor the junior support that they need. So they don't have an adequate number of registrars and junior doctors in the haematology team to help with that appointment's workload. And that's what's driving up the wait times for people. And that then also has an impact on the emergency department, because GPs will have to send people into the emergency department in order to be seen, because they're not being seen enough as outpatients, or the time is taking too long for them to get an appointment. And that just affects everyone then, because anyone who is going to the emergency department is competing with people who should be seen as outpatients, and that's across all disciplines.
Yeah, so what have the HSE said in terms of improving services in this area?
Yeah, they've said that they're trying to recruit an additional haematology consultant. And while that is welcome, you know, this is the answer to everything. And absolutely, additional human resources in any kind of discipline of medicine in the hospital is very welcome. But it's more that we actually need a review of the team and how it operates.
But just, is there a vacancy there?
Well, there's
or when they say the hospital's making every effort to recruit a third haematologist, like, is that a funded position, or are they trying to make the case within the HSE for an additional haematologist?
That information wasn't provided to me,
because,
so yeah,
I've been doing a little
big
bit
difference.
Yeah, exactly, and I've been doing a little bit of digging as to how some of these positions are approved, and how far up the chain it goes is crazy. And the arguments that have to be made. It's not the local manager. It's not Sealta. It's not even the head of the HSE. Mm-hmm. What's that? CAC? They have to make the recommendation. They have to receive a recommendation to approve some of these positions. And sometimes with all the campaigning right down at our local level, that recommendation doesn't get to them because there is another red line there that has to be crossed. Like, it is crazy how difficult it is to get, particularly to Letterkenny, these positions approved. Like, look how long it took to get the breast surgeon that position approved. Like, that took forever. And it was only approved on the day before the health minister came to Donegal after years. Mm-hmm. So Is there, has the need for an additional hematologist been recognised, and are we trying to actively recruit one? And this is the quagmire that's the HSE, Declan.
Absolutely.
I know you struggle to get the same answers that we do, and you're an elected rep, right?
Yeah.
So we don't really know that at this point. Mm-hmm. Are we at the start of the journey, or are we close to the end? And also funding. LUH is seeking to secure long-term funding to allow this to happen as well. That's also a problem.
Yeah, funding is a huge issue. And as you've pointed out there, the systems that are currently in place for approval, for allocating funding for any post, are far too arduous and far too complicated and take too long. That is not a functional health system. A functional health system should be able to react quickly and adapt quickly. And we have the absolute opposite of that. And the people who suffer as a result of that, ultimately, are patients. And over the past year since I've been on the Regional Health Forum, what I have unfortunately been able to illustrate is that Donegal patients are at the raw end of that deal time and time again. Mm. When you do a comparison across the Western and Northwestern region, they have the worst wait times for home help, for physio, for OT, for cancer treatment. Like, the list goes on. And unfortunately, I think the list will go on. Mm-hmm. So it's about time that, like, we have to call time on it. Yeah. We had a meeting last night.
Go ahead, Declan.
Regional Health Forum meeting with Oireachtas members, with the HSE. And it was in relation to surgical capacity at LUH. And obviously this is a huge issue around the surgical hub. And it's yet another example of Letterkenny being left behind. And we have countless evidence to show that. Mm. We need the HSE to stop and listen. We need them to take a step back and say, hold on a minute, what is going on here? And do something about it. What was amazing last night, Greg, was every single politician that was on that call was on the same page. And I think that there's strength in that. And I think that that's something that we need to leverage and capitalise on to deliver results for the people of Donegal.
I put it to the health minister that, you know, we need more funding. And she says, what do you mean we need more funding? I'll have to look into that because it's had one of the biggest increases in funding in recent years. But in recent years, the hospital has 19 million in the red one year, mm-hmm. 10 million in the red another year, 9 million in the red another year. What does that mean? So when we talk about additional funding, and you have the hospital, unless I'm mistaken, but the figures I saw seem to indicate the hospital was short 19, 10 and 10 million. What does that mean to its funding going forward? Yeah. Or, you know what, I don't know the answer to that question, but they're talking about seeking additional funding for a third haematologist, yet it seems to be underfunded hand over fist.
Yeah, absolutely. Time and again.
The more I look into it, the more of a basket case the whole thing becomes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that is, like, the crux of the matter there is there has to be an actual assessment of how Letterkenny University Hospital...
There's no registrar in Letterkenny.
No.
There's not a single registrar there.
And so it needs to be looked at in terms of, like, how the hospital is run, how it's managed, how it's operating, a root and branch review of it. Because everything is there to show that it is not invested into the same extent as Sligo or Galway, for example.
I think there is some work going on in the background, mm-hmm. Looking at the KPIs and its funding and all that type of stuff. Will that be listened to? I don't know. You would hope it might be, but it will lay bare the situation. It's very, very difficult. And as I say, this even goes above the Sealta head's head.
Yeah, absolutely it does. And I think that what we need, though, from the HSE West and North West management and hospital management...
Is to call it out
and for them to be on the same side as us. Mm-hmm. We can't have people blindly defending the HSE's structures and the HSE's processes and policies if they're not working and not delivering for patients. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly what we need. And we're not seeing evidence of that yet, and it's frustrating, but that's the job of us as public representatives now moving forward, is to put pressure so that that campaign formulates, because ultimately it's the people of Donegal, not anywhere else, who are getting the raw deal here.
Well, that's it. And you know, it's never lost in the conversation. Both you and I know exactly what we're talking about is real people here and the impact it has on their lives. And why, if you are a patient of Letterkenny University Hospital with a serious condition that requires haematology, why would you be waiting for ages when someone who's associated with the Mayo General Hospital or University has virtually no weight at all?
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? That you can't be so geographically disadvantaged, surely. This listener says, my wife is waiting almost 2.5 years for a haematology appointment. The hospital send a letter every 4 months or so to see if she's still interested. Like, yeah. I mean, what are we waiting on?
Yeah, and that's it was in the response of the HSE to my question as well, was around, you know, we're checking in with patients basically to see if they still require an appointment. I mean, it is ludicrous. It's a dysfunctional and a broken system. And as I say, it's not just around haematology, unfortunately. And what we have then is not only patients being disadvantaged, but you have staff working in a really, really difficult environment.
Well, that's it. And recruitment and retention comes into it.
Yeah, and they're huge issues.
I think someone who's waiting 2.5 years on a haematology appointment, to send them a letter every four months to see if they still need it, actually is cruel.
Yeah.
I think that's actually cruel, because every time that letter comes, you wonder, is this it?
Yeah.
And it's just to sort of say, effectively, maybe you've magically cured, maybe you're dead. I don't know what they're waiting on.
Absolutely, yeah. It is cruel. You could imagine the worry that people have when they're waiting on appointments like that. What we're talking about, let's be clear as well, is these are public waiting lists. Mm. These are people who don't have access to private healthcare.
Yeah.
So that's a huge inequality there in itself.
Yeah, we really need to keep digging deeper on the whole funding of Letterkenny University Hospital and how it's treated and who's making these calls as it relates to the hospital about, say, for instance, the appointment of professionals from colleges, for an example. Mm-hmm. You know, how many are being approved here compared to elsewhere? It's very low here, it has to be said. Whilst I have you in, not wishing to stereotype you or pigeonhole you, I did really little earlier on. Now, you see, this is... I don't do public acts of affection. I don't know about you, but I mean, I'm not really that type. So I look at this and I go, well, I don't want to do it anyway. So,
sure.
But we heard from a TD that suggested, you're a member of the LGBT community, that he feels cautious about saying holding hands with his partner, same-sex partner, in cities now because of the changing attitude towards members of the LGBT plus community. Do you recognise? I mean, obviously we recognise his concerns. That's his lived experience. But has there been a change, do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that this week marks the 10th anniversary of marriage equality. And I think that was a huge turning point for the LGBT community in general in Ireland. And it has had a knock-on effect internationally, never mind just in Ireland. And I think that there was a period there where, you know, it was kind of a golden era. And I think that there is a turn again away from that. Now, I'm not hugely into public displays of affection myself, right? But I would feel much more confident doing that on the streets of Letterkenny than I would on the streets of Dublin.
Yeah.
And this is from someone who lived in Dublin for 8 years and was always comfortable. I think Dublin has changed, and I think that there are certain attitudes which are being emboldened and given permission by the current climate that we are living in and living through. And that poses a threat to people's safety. I mean, the amount of attacks relating to homophobia and transphobia, particularly in Dublin and in Belfast, have gone hugely up over the past number of years. And I don't have the exact statistics, obviously, because I'm not prepared to speak on it. But
yeah, but also too, what we're seeing them popping up on TikTok or what have you, someone who's had that
absolutely.
Experience on a night out.
So it's there's definitely been a bit of a sea change. And I think that is more prevalent in the cities perhaps than in the countryside. Mm. And it's a real shame to see that, because I mean, the beauty and the how joyous the marriage equality referendum was 10 years ago was that it was sending such a strong message to young people who were growing up and coming out about how acceptable and welcomed and everything that they are in Irish society. And there's definitely a change. There's definitely a change over the past few years.
But that doesn't necessarily mean there's been a change in the general population's attitude. It could be that there are a small group of people who might punch you in the face because they don't like your haircut.
Yeah,
but they feel that this is a justifiable reason to target another individual. Do you know what I mean? Rather than it being reflective of...
Definitely.
We're less likely to see someone behave like that in Letterkenny because of the population.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And I think that, look, it applies to everything. I think we're living in a time where people feel more emboldened, a minority of people, absolutely, to be homophobic, transphobic, racist, sexist, whatever it is.
Because every second house is going to have someone in that community.
Absolutely.
Really, truth be told, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, for sure.
It doesn't have to be a son or a daughter. It could be your nephew or niece. So with that in mind, I can't imagine a massive across the population see change in attitude. It just means that some
people are becoming more emboldened and more vocal.
Is it possible that the big focus on the trans community and the big pushback against the trans community, be it the Supreme Court ruling in the UK, what's happening in the United States, the whole conversation about access to bathrooms and what have you, and all that kind of stuff, and the stuff that's in the school curriculum, etc. Is it possible that because because it's seen as a whole spectrum of the community, you've got lesbian, gay, and bisexual people, with trans and queers and others, that has that means that the advancement of rights for the LGB community have regressed?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think that the attitudes towards trans people, I think, come from the same place as everything else that we're talking about. Mm. And I think that there's an awful lot of scapegoating about a tiny minority of people and fear-mongering around the existence of trans people. And 99.9% of the people who are doing that have probably never met a trans person. And that would be my concern around it. And the threat seems like it's ridiculous.
I think what complicates it, though, is that from what I see, a lot of women are opining on the trans issue is that they aren't actually extremist or what have you. Is that an important and a very important group of people that should be protected, that their rights are elevated above 50% of the population. So in other words, their rights to access, say for instance, facilities that match their gender. Their rights are being held, say, for instance, in the case of women, whereby a person can, and in this country you can just self-identify, right, that their rights are being held higher than those of women who might feel uncomfortable with a trans woman in their space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is a complicating factor, but I think that there's no evidence to back that up, though, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the issue that I have with those opinions, is show me the evidence where the trans woman is sneaking into X,
well,
Y, and Z.
It's not sneaking.
Well,
threatened. There are people who identify as trans women that aren't undergoing hormonal treatment, mm-hmm. no corrective surgery, that are in Donegal using female spaces.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm not a woman, and I'm not in there. I don't know, but I do know that some women might find that might feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, and look, I understand that as well, but I think that we can all feel uncomfortable about things, but sometimes there can be a good reason for it, and sometimes maybe there's not a good reason for it.
I
do think that there is an awful lot of noise, specifically noise, around the trans issue and people identifying as trans. And I think to bring it back to what you'd initially asked, does that kind of debate or that discussion, and I don't think anyone's existence should be debated or discussed in this way, really, does that affect people's perceptions of LGB?
I don't believe it's, sorry.
No, it's not that you're doing that.
But I don't think it's actually their, in fairness, I don't think it's their existence.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe the spaces in which they go into. Mm-hmm. Because I hope most people want people to live their best lives.
Yeah, and to do so safely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were going to say about...
But just, you had asked if it's affecting kind of attitudes towards LGB people in general. And I think there is a correlation there. I think that absolutely is... Look, as we've seen from... you know, various kind of sources over the past number of years, this kind of anti-woke and calling anything that's progressive or liberal woke, and that's kind of become a dirty word. And that's attached to everything then. So when people are discriminating or whatever against trans people, that has a knock-on effect because it's sliding into LGB people, but also women. Like, this is also a conversation that affects women, not just about their safety or their unease maybe about sharing spaces with trans women, but it's about the very people who are raising those concerns, who are not female, who are male, who pose threats to women as well. So I think the whole thing is linked, and I think there's a lot of...
Yeah, I think even if there's no evidence that anything ever bad has ever happened. There are things I have difficulty processing, and that would be a trans woman in a swimming pool changing room with young girls and other women, especially if they're identifying as trans lesbian and have gone through none of the.
But anyway,
I'm not in that space.
That's your concern. Just because someone is trans or because they're LGB does not mean that they're a threat to anyone. And I think that's important to point out.
Yeah, exactly. It was talking specifically of trans, but I understand exactly what you're saying. Listen, thanks for that.
Thank you very much.
Two actually really quite important issues. And the reason... I'm a big advocate of actually us having proper conversations about that stuff rather than not, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
And it's just by coincidence you happened to be in when that story was in. Thanks so much for raising the haematology issue. I know you'll keep working on that. We'll keep making our inquiries. And have a great day. Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks, Greg.
On. Take care. Caller says, what a great show yesterday, Greg. You should do your show from other towns in Innishow and make it a monthly thing to show our lovely towns and people, etc. Well, it's not just my show, of course, our show. We're out and about all of the time in different communities right across Donegal and Derry and Tyrone. We do that all the time. And we are out and about more in the summer because obviously the weather and what have you. So we will be out in different places. Don't worry about that. And as I say, it's not just this show. John Bresson be out and about, David James as well, and others. Rory on a Saturday, and Paul as well. So we do be out and about. Don't worry about that. Right, now, the Buncrana Civil Registration Office is to reopen. There was a pushback on this. Amongst those pushing back was Sinn Féin councillor and Cathaoirleach of the Innishowen Municipal District, Jack Murray. Good morning to you, Jack.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, okay. So it's going back to the primary care centre in Buncrana, and that's from today. How important to this do you think?
I think it's massively important. Now, it's only one day a week for now on a Wednesday by appointment only, but it's a massive step in the right direction. And look, I would have spoken about this on your show in the past when the decision was made to close it, and what outlined the importance, particularly the likes of people from Malinhead, North Innishowen, would have to travel the whole way to Letterkenny to avail of the service. Look, it just isn't acceptable, particularly for older people. Now, this is the Births, Deaths and Marriages office, so obviously a lot of people that will have passed will have elderly family members, relatives, and to expect those people to make that long journey was just unacceptable to me. So I'm delighted. It's a U-turn because they had said at the time it was closing that they weren't going to reverse this decision. But at that time, myself, Paddy McLaughlin, would have made repeated representations through the HSE, and in fairness now to other local representatives, or all local representatives that represent Buncrana, all made similar representations. And through your own show, we had a platform to voice the concerns of the people, and thankfully the HSE have heard that call and have made this decision, and from today on the service is restored one day a week.
But with that in mind, you and Porrig and others and Austin, whatever it might perceive there's a demand there, and this is another stripping of services from Buncrana or Innishowen. So really we're in this situation again, that we're in a trial period here. Really the HSE is putting it up to the community and those who campaign for this return. You know, let's see how much it is actually used, albeit one day a week, over the next 3 months, because this is a trial U-turn, so to speak. Am I framing that correctly?
Yeah, and that's a key point. And I would encourage everybody to use this as much as possible when necessary. The HSC have said this has been reviewed every 3 months. So let's not give them an excuse to close this. Let's not let them say that the numbers aren't enough and that people aren't availing of it. Make sure you make your appointment. Make sure that when needed, that you use our service in our peninsula in Buncrana. It's in the primary care centre. So, okay, you can book in advance every Wednesday. Keep the number strong, and hopefully we can get this expanded. They've U-turned on this already. Hopefully we can get expanded and made permanent rather than just this rolling 3 month review.
Yeah, but it is that old phrase, use it or lose it again, unfortunately. You can make an appointment. We have the numbers here, actually. There's three of them, and there's no point me listing them off now because people aren't sitting there with a pen and paper. But you can make an appointment if you want to register a birth or a death. What else can you do? You obviously register your marriage and stuff.
And marriages as well, yeah, okay, some registration, yeah.
So people know exactly what the situation is. All right, Jack, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Take care of yourself. So that is welcomed news, but if it's not used to the extent that requires the service to be there, and I'm not sure what the figure is from a HSC perspective, they can justifiably then say, right, there isn't the demand, and you can either travel to Letterkenny or do it online. Right, the proper menu name for pink sauce is rosemary sauce, and it's the sauce traditionally served with prawn cocktail. That comes from it, Anne in Gortley. Yes, of course, but I think in terms of that sauce, there might be a bit of lime through it. Am I correct, Anne? I'm talking about just straight up ketchup and mayonnaise, and as I say, certainly in South Donegal, it's pink sauce. You'd never get taco sauce if you asked for pink sauce, but you are correct, rosemary sauce. But as I say, I think there's a... if you give the kids rosemary sauce now, they wouldn't want it because there's lime or something else through it. I can't remember quite what's through it. But you are correct. That's its origins, no doubt about that. Right. It's obvious the state wants to depopulate Donegal, says a listener. Otherwise, the health service would be there. Why are the TDs not complaining? Where's Pat the Cope and McConnellogue? Why don't you ask them, as they are in the government? Well, Deputy Pat the Cope Gallagher was quite vocal on the health service in the lead-up to the health minister coming to Donegal. I didn't see Charlie McConnellogue during her visit. And he was of the view, I believe, it was said to me, that... her visit, it was just a photo op, and that's why he and other reps didn't attend. A caller says, we are treated as second class in Donegal. Letterkenny Hospital never gets its fair share of services and staff. We seem to be screwed all the time. And can I add something on there? I don't actually think sometimes it's second class. I think it's third or fourth class, because you have some hospitals that there's no waiting times or no issues. You have others where there are waits and issues, but they're within sort of, you know, boundaries that are set. And then you have us, whereby when you compare some of the stats for us compared to other hospitals, particularly other Model 3 hospitals, it's off the charts. So if you don't mind me saying, I think there's like leagues, there's Premier League, Division 1, and arguably we're in Division 2. A caller says it's unacceptable that someone who went to Ballykelly for an operation is now waiting over 6 months on her refund from Letterkenny. I took out a loan of €10,000 for this, and I'm just about making the repayments. Why is a refund taking so long? Well, what communications are you getting back? Certainly, if it was me, I'd get on to the Ombudsman, who's a particular interest in relation to this. If you call us back, we'll get you the details of his office, and maybe they can chase it up for you. You shouldn't be waiting that long. I wonder why are they... quibbling with you, or what's the story? If we can be of any further assistance, let us know. I know exactly what you're saying. You took out that loan believing it'd be settled in a matter of weeks. Now it's 6 months on. Not easy at all. Get back in touch with us. We'll try and put you in contact with the Ombudsman's office. Hi, is it okay for a man who identifies as a woman to enter a woman's changing room? Is there no safety for women and girls these days? Oh, they say, how is it okay? That's the big convo, and it's a controversial one. There's just absolutely no doubt about that. But in this country, you can sort of self-identify. It's different in other countries where you need a gender recognition certificate, what have you. But I don't believe you need one in this country. Councillor Meehan said there's no evidence of trans men using female toilets. Okay, I'll read the comment and then I'll come back on this first line. If a young female girl feels uncomfortable, then it's an issue. Females are entitled to voice their individual concerns and not accept group mentality. He never said there was no evidence of trans women using female toilets. I think what he said was is that there's no evidence that it's a danger or there's no evidence that it's a threat. I don't believe I'm misquoting him, but I mean, I know for a fact that it happens. So, and Councillor Meehan does too. I'm a landlord with a house rented out to a young woman with a child. This young family, who applied for the HAP system, are waiting since January and being made jump hoops to get on the scheme. She's going nowhere. I've tried the system on her behalf and going nowhere too. I was contacted by a Ukrainian family. She told me she can have it within 2 weeks, plus my Irish family gets €470, the foreign nationals €800, though that's been dropped to six. When is this country going to wake up? My Irish family work but still meet the criteria for HAP. Don't know. I think it's waking up. As I say, there are changes to those rules. I mean, some of the rent that's being paid out there at the moment is unbelievable. It's really driving up the rental market, that extra $800 cash-free in the system, you know. Like, I would have heard stories of Ukrainian families moving out of hotel accommodation paying 12, 13, 14 hundred euro in rent per month. That's what landlords are able to get. And I'm not talking in the heart of Letterkenny here either. And that's bound to put the price of rent generally up because there's an extra 800 cash-free or tax-free in play. And they are topping up. There's no doubt about that. That's going to be reduced to six, but it's still having an impact, a difficult impact on the system. No doubt about it, especially given the short supply of housing that exists. Hi, Greg. It's beyond time. We hold our councillors to account as they've failed to address the impact of IPASS centres on Donegal. They still seem intent on ignoring it, hoping it goes away. Their silence, they say, is aiding the destruction of our country. Okay, that's a view that comes in similarly worded quite regularly.